ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नैथे गुणा न गुणिनो महदादयो ये सर्वे मना प्रवृत्तया सह देवमर्त्या आद्यन्तवन्त उरुगाय विदन्ति हि त्वम् एवं विमृश्य सुदियो विरमन्ति शब्दात् Neither the three modes of material nature, sattva guna, rajoguna, and tamaguna, nor the predominating deities controlling these three modes, nor the five gross elements, nor the mind, nor the demigods, nor the human beings can understand your lordship, for they are all subjected to birth and annihilation. Considering this, the spiritually advanced have taken to devotional service. Such wise men hardly bother with Vedic study. Instead, they engage themselves in practical devotional service. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As stated in several places, bhaktyamam abhijananti, only by devotional service can the Supreme Lord be understood. The intelligent person, the devotee, does not bother much about the practices mentioned in text 46, mona brata sruta tapo dhyana swadharma. After understanding the Supreme Lord through devotional service, such devotees are no longer interested in studies of the Vedas. Indeed, this is confirmed in the Vedas also. The Vedas say, Kim artha vayam adyeshyamahi, kim artha vayam vakshyamahe. What is the use of studying so many Vedic literatures? What is the use of explaining them in different ways? Varam vakshamahe. No one needs to study any more Vedic literatures, nor does anyone need to describe them by philosophical speculation. Bhagavad Gita also says, Yada te moha kalilam, Budhir vyati tarishyati tadagantasi nirvedam srotavasya srutasya cha. When one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead by executing devotional service, one ceases the practice of studying the Vedic literature. Elsewhere it is said, aradhito yadi harish tapasa tata kim. If one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in His service, there is no more need of severe austerities, penances, and so on. However, if after performing severe austerities and penances, one does not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such practices are useless. We are reading today from Canto 7 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 9, entitled Prahlad Pacifies the Lord with Prayers, Text 49. in the previous prayers that Prahlad Maharaj has offered to the Supreme Lord, Narasimha Dev, he expresses his own humility. Not seeing himself as somebody who has performed great deeds, but rather someone who is born in a very lowly situation, who is very vulnerable to Maya, but who has been blessed by his spiritual master, Narada Muni. And he prays that his only real anxiety is to forget Krishna, or to see other people within this world in forgetfulness of Krishna. And he's praying to the Lord for the opportunity to be empowered, to remain in this world as an instrument of compassion, to help those who are suffering the pleasures and pains of temporary life, so that he could help them to remember Krishna and be happy. What is it that Prahlad wants to give to the world? He explains in previous verses the power of Maya, the power of the false ego, the power of the attraction between the opposite sexes, and how people become so mad, lose their intelligence, contemplating, enjoying these things. They are impelled to engage in sinful activities. But the only real solution, in Prahlad's estimation, is what he is speaking of in this verse. He wants nothing else but bhakti. There's nothing else to give anyone except bhakti. Everything else in the entire creation, both material and spiritual, is a distraction except bhakti. Prahlad has seen his own father, what were his austerities. No one can fathom the austerities that Hiranyakashipu performed and the powers that he gained through those austerities. They were not just ordinary powers. They were supernatural powers. They were mystic cities. If anyone in this world had even a drop of the ocean of the mystic powers of Hiranyakashipu, they would be considered the most powerful men on earth. Foolish people would worship them as God. Prahlad saw all this. Hiranyakashipu conquered every demigod except Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. That was his powers. He controlled the temperature. He controlled the movements of the planets. Who can do that? But Prahlad saw, despite all these, what most people would consider great spiritual powers, there was no real inner happiness in Hiranyakashipu. He was resorting to intoxications, not the kind of intoxications we drink. Obviously, very, very high quality. Heavenly intoxications. Prahlad was not impressed. That person who everyone in the universe was praising when they stood in front of him. The demigods, when they stood in front of Hiranyakashipu, they praised him. They had to. The sages, even Narada Muni, they flattered him. They had to. They were obedient to him. The little Prahlad, every time he met his father, he offered his obeisances, great respect. And he always waited for his father to ask him a question. He didn't just come out and speak. He was very respectful. When Hiranyakashipu asked him a question, he answered honestly from his heart. It was very sweet, but it was very true. He didn't chastise his father. He very lovingly, as a well-wisher, just explained the truth to him. That because you're smatirna krishne paratashvatova mitopibetyeti grihavratanam adanta gobirvishatam tamishram puna punash charavata charavanana. My father, because you are so addicted to sense gratification, subtle and gross, there's no way you can understand the Lord, either by your own efforts, with the help of others, or the combination of both, because you uselessly waste your life chewing that which has already been chewed. Unless you take the dust of the feet of the pure devotees who have no material attachment and bathe your body with that dust, you will never understand what is the goal of life. Intolerable for Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu had everything, literally everything except bhakti. He had jnana, he had yoga, mastered Ashtanga yoga. Who today, people do asanas, which are very good for health and for the mind. But who can do this tadasan of standing on your tiptoes with your head, with your hands above your head for 100 celestial years without moving? He was a yogi. He was a serious yogi. You know, yogis, you know, they teach you to sit in Siddhasan or Padmasan and don't move for 1 hour when you're doing meditation. Don't move for 2 hours. Don't move for 3 hours, even though mosquitoes are biting you. Yes? We've seen you sitting in meditation. And then mosquitoes start coming. And then you start getting itches. Itches in your nose, itches on your head. And, you know, pretty soon your meditation is on the itch.
It's just driving you crazy. Or the meditation is on this mosquito just, you know, just taking his pointed little sword and sticking it in you, and you feel him sucking your blood, and then you're worried about malaria. And then it starts itching like intolerably. But still, I will endure it. I'm a yogi. Maybe for an hour or so. What kind of yogi was Hiranyakashipu? We get hungry. We get hungry, we get weak. When we become hungry and weak and tired, our mind becomes very agitated. Yes? Well, Hiranyakashipu, when he stood there at that Mandara mountain site, he didn't eat anything. He didn't drink anything, and he didn't sleep. Yes? Many of you are sleeping now. Even with the air conditioning on. He didn't have air conditioning. He was standing in the hot sun. He was standing in the winter. And he had ants all over his body, covering his body. He had ants eating him. Not just little ants, but really, they were chewing his body. They were drinking his blood. And he didn't sleep. And he didn't eat. And he didn't drink. For thousands of years. He's a powerful yogi. And what kind of mastery he had of the universe. Prahlad saw it. Prahlad didn't care for any of these things. Prahlad had one thing and only one thing. He didn't have strength. He didn't have all. Hiranyakashipu was a great scholar. Read his prayers. He knew the Vedas. He had a tremendous memory. Little Prahlad, he only had devotion. From his guru, he understood that's all that's important. With that, everything else has importance. Without that, nothing has importance. Because only devotion pleases Krishna. Durvasa Muni was a great ascetic, powerful yogi, Amsa of Shiva. Ambarish was a grihastha, with a wife, with children, spending so much of his time, you know, ruling the state. But he did everything for Krishna. He was a householder who just dedicated everything he did to Krishna. And yet Durvasa Muni, when he tried to kill Ambarish with his mystic powers, the Supreme Lord was there to protect him. Ambarish didn't even make an attempt to protect himself. He honored the sage. If the sage wants to kill me, then it's my destiny, whatever the Lord wills. He had the full protection of Krishna. And ultimately, Durvasa Muni was trying to find refuge. Indra, Brahma, Shiva, none of them could help. Finally, he went to Vishnu. And Lord Narayan explained his own heart. He said, he has bhakti. There's nothing more powerful than bhakti. Why? Because bhakti is the only thing that attracts me. There is karma, kanda, jnana kanda, astanga kanda, where Krishna can give you material wealth, even like Indra. Krishna can give you, if you follow the karma kanda very, very strictly, do your yajnas, do your piety. Through jnana kanda, he could give you liberation, mukti. Through astanga kanda, he could give you mystic powers. Through bhakti, Krishna gives himself. Personally. There's no other means. Bhakti amam abhijananti. There's no other way. Krishna gives his heart to a devotee. Yayatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. If you give your heart to Krishna, Krishna will give his heart to you. That is devotional service. And there is no other means of understanding Krishna as he is. In Mahabharata, Duryodhana was going to offer Krishna so many precious gifts, a royal reception. But Krishna preferred Vidura and his wife giving him a banana. It's a good instruction. Which would you rather have? Gold, diamonds, emeralds, silver, magnificent feast, wonderful silks, chariots, palaces? Duryodhana was willing to give all that to Krishna. Krishna would rather have a banana peel from Vidura. Because he's bhavagrahi. He doesn't see the thing. He sees the feeling. Krishna accepts and enjoys devotion. This is the principle. To keep that focus on devotion. Lord Chaitanya, he told to Haridas Thakur, after Haridas just prayed to be in his future lives given the blessing of the remnants of the food of the Vaishnavas, such an act of devotion. Such a desire of devotion. To be the servant of the servant of the servant. Lord Chaitanya praised him. And he said the only way one can achieve that devotion is to have the intense desire to gain it, to be given it. There's no other way. You cannot get pure devotional service by your austerities, by your knowledge, by your charity, by your expertise in whatever you do. Lord Chaitanya says, you can only get bhakti, real bhakti, by the intense desire to have it. That eagerness, that lobha, that transcendental greed for the love of God. That brahmachari was approaching Srivas every day. Please, please let me see Lord Chaitanya dance just one time. I'll be yours forever. Just give me this one blessing. And Srivas was very moved by his He was very eager. And he let the brahmachari in secretly. Lord Chaitanya danced for just a minute or so. Then he stopped the kirtan. Is there any person who is not supposed to be here? Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, there are no atheists, there are no sense enjoyers, but there is one brahmachari, but he only drinks milk, little fruit, very austere. He really wants to see you. To teach the world, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became like fire. Get him out of here before I destroy him and everything else. Get him out of here. I don't want any milk drinker in this house. And Brahmachari was trembling. He left. And there were two things that happened within his heart. One is, he was very humble. He understood that the Lord's chastisement was right. He deserved it. And it was the Lord's mercy that he punished him. He saw punishment as the Lord's mercy. And also, he got to see a minute of that dance. And even though he didn't deserve it, he was so grateful for that. He was humble and he was grateful. These are qualities that are very much foundational to bhakti. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his heart took note of that. He's humble and he's grateful. So he called him back and he gave him a very powerful instruction. Do not think that you can see God through any other way except bhakti. Don't be proud of your austerities. Don't depend on them. It is only bhakti. What austerities did the gopis do? What austerities did Gajendra do? They were simple people, but they conquered the Lord because they had devotion. Devananda Pandit was he had an intellect that is beyond anything in this world. We're impressed by a good speaker. Devananda Pandit, he impressed even the greatest scholars. He was the topmost speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam in all of Navadvipa. And he was very, very sattvic in every way. He never engaged in any sinful activities. He was very charitable. He was very disciplined and austere. He was absolutely pious. And he was an intellectual genius who knew the Vedas in and out. Great pundits and scholars would sit at his feet. Lord Chaitanya happened to walk by and heard him reciting Bhagavatam, and he became angry, very angry. What right, he started screaming, what right do you have to speak Srimad Bhagavatam? You have no right because you have no devotion. You cannot respect and honor the Vaishnavas and you have no devotion. Therefore, I will come and rip your Bhagavatam to pieces. And Lord Chaitanya ran toward him. And the devotees had to stop the Lord. So yes, here he is studying Bhagavatam. He probably knew every verse by memory. And he can give eloquent, elaborate purports for every verse. And most likely, in his commentaries, he can give the most intellectually stimulating, amazing, mind-boggling cross-references to other Vedic literatures to prove his points. But to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it didn't give him pleasure. He was angry. What was it that finally was his qualification to get mercy? All his piety, all his charity, all his austerity, all his immense intellectual genius of the Vedas did not attract the Lord's mercy. But when Vakreshwar Pandit, who was a dear devotee of the Lord, was dancing in Devananda Pandit's ashram, Devananda Pandit became attracted to this Vaishnav and wanted to serve him. And crowds were coming around. And so that Vakreshwar Pandit could dance without interruption, Devananda Pandit, with a stick, was keeping the crowds back. He was performing a very menial service. And when Devananda Pandit would faint or fall down, Vakreshwar Pandit, Devananda would catch him and massage him and dust the dust from his body. But he did it with feeling. He really had respect and wanted to please and serve. He was doing such a menial service for Vakreshwar Pandit. But that little, tiny, menial service, that actually anyone could have done it. What Devananda Pandit did for Vakreshwar Pandit, anyone could have done it. Just hold the crowds back. Dust his body off. Massage him. Every single one of you in this room could do that. Every single person in Bombay could do that. Wasn't anything so spectacular. But as far as his charity, his piety, his knowledge of the Vedas, nobody could do it. No one could imitate him. So something that was so ordinary attracted the love of Lord Chaitanya. And all the things that were so extraordinary did not attract him at all. Because he served Vakreshwar Pandit in a very simple, practical way with devotion. And because of that, Devananda Pandit, by the Lord's mercy, his heart was transformed. Then he understood who Lord Chaitanya was. Then he understood all of his aparads of the past. And he approached Lord Chaitanya with great humility. He stood a little distance because he was afraid. And Lord Chaitanya saw him in Kuliagram when Lord Chaitanya came back after taking sannyas. And he said, Devananda Pandit, because you have served Vakreshwar Pandit and given him pleasure, you could come here to see me. You have won my heart. Very instructive to the whole world. All of the elaborate studies. And you know, through his speaking Bhagavatam, he was becoming world famous. Through serving Vakreshwar Pandit, nobody even knew about that. You know, they just saw it and no big thing. He's holding the crowds back. So what he worked so hard for, and what he got such world fame for, the Lord cared nothing about that. But this simple little devotion meant so much for him. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Devananda Pandit that when you speak Srimad Bhagavatam, every word means bhakti, devotional service. There's no other purpose of the Bhagavatam. Now, yayatamam prapadyante, the Bhagavatam is none different than Krishna. And according to how you approach the Bhagavatam, you're going to see it differently. Nigama kalpa taror galitam palam. The Vedas are desire trees. And the ripened fruit is Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharma projita kaita vatra parama niramat sananam sada. Kicks out all other cheating forms of religion and only deals with pure unalloyed bhakti. But yet, if that's not what we want, if we don't have the proper mercy of the Vaishnavas, we'll read Bhagavatam and we'll see something else. Krishna says, man manabhavam bhakto in Bhagavad Gita, always think of me. Always think of me is very simple. It means always think of me. But most people in the world, when they read it, even the greatest Sanskrit scholars are saying, when Krishna says me, he doesn't mean me. He means the unborn, infinite, impersonal existence within him. These are great Sanskrit scholars speaking this way. And they could make so many Vedic cross references. Vedaischa sarvera hameva vedo vedanta krit veda vadeva chaham. Krishna says, I am the compiler of the Vedas. I am the knower of the Vedas. And by all the Vedas, I am to be known. If you want liberation, if you want material progress, then you're going to see Prahlad Maharaj talking about those things, although it's so obvious what he's saying. Because unless you have the association of devotees, and thus you're influenced by their association, you cannot understand it as it is. It's very clear. In Sri Rangam, there were great Vedic scholars. And there was one Brahmin who was illiterate. The other scholars were laughing at him, ridiculing him. Why? He comes every day to read the whole Bhagavad Gita. Can you imagine? These people, they understood the Gita. They could philosophically, systematically recite the Gita. Perfect Sanskrit meter. Give all kinds of purports to every verse. These are the best scholars in the world. And here's this illiterate man just struggling through it, hours and hours a day, trying to get through the 700 verses of the Gita. Why? Lord Chaitanya asked him, why are you crying? He said, I don't understand what I'm reading, but my Guru Maharaj told me to do it. And I have faith in my Gurudev, so I am doing it to serve him. And when I read, I may not understand all the philosophy in the words, but I just see the beautiful form of Krishna as the charioteer of Arjuna. That's all. His beautiful blackish form, standing in the chariot, serving his devotee. Mahaprabhu cried. He made the Lord cry. The Lord embraced him and gave him ecstatic love. And for the next 4 months, the Lord associated with this person every day. While all the others were chanting their Sanskrit hymns with great expertise and very scrutinizingly with their keen intelligence,
analyzing each verse.
It's a great lesson to the world. The Lord wants our devotion. Lord Chaitanya gave the scholars scholarship. He gave the intellectuals intellect. He gave the tapasis tremendous power to do tapasya. But for this Brahman, Lord Chaitanya gave himself. He gave himself. Lord Vishnu told Durvasa Muni that because the devotees know nothing but me, I know nothing but them. Because they see me as their only property, they are my only property. I am conquered by the love of my devotee. Yashoda Mai binds Krishna. Satyabhama treats Krishna like a henpecked husband. The gopas, they wrestle with Krishna and win. Krishna is conquered by the love of his devotee. Hanumanji went to Sri Lanka. Ravana was equal to Hiranyakashipu. In fact, he was Hiranyakashipu. He was very powerful. He had so much wealth. Gold standard. There's a place in America called Fort Knox, I think it is, where they keep the gold. And at one time, all the currency was representing that gold. If you had a dollar, that represented a certain quantity of gold in Fort Knox. And that's what gave it value. It's a lot of gold. But Sri Lanka? I mean, there was probably more gold than the whole Fort Knox in Ravana's toilet room. He had a lot of gold. And what to speak of his temple room. He had a temple room where he worshipped Shiva, Brahma. What to speak of his living room, his bedroom? What to speak of the outside, the inside? Everything, gold. So much wealth. So much power. So much knowledge. So much strength. Hanuman looked at him and thought, so many gifts he has received. But without bhakti, they're all useless. Hanuman, he had a lot of strength and knowledge and everything, but he and his monkeys, they didn't have any wealth. Their only wealth was bhakti. They were just living in the forest. But that's all they wanted. They didn't want anything else. They just wanted bhakti. And this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Rupa Goswami have said. You can only get bhakti if that's the only thing you want. To the degree you want anything else, to that degree you will not get bhakti. To the degree that's the singular thing that you really want in your life, and everything else is to support that, to facilitate that, to express that, then you can get it. Now we find our great Vaishnav scholars, how they knew the Vedas. Prabhupada is quoting from the Bhagavad Gita, 252. And then he says, when one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead by executing devotional service, one ceases to practice of studying the Vedic literature. Hare Krishna. And then Prabhupada says again that the intelligent person, the devotee, does not bother much about practices mentioned in this text. After understanding the Supreme Lord through devotional service, such devotees are no longer interested in studies of the Vedas. So to understand this in the proper context, when Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami left their careers as ministers in the royal kingdom of Bengal and went to Vrindavan, they brought with them an entire library of Vedic literatures. And they very scrutinizingly studied Vedas. Srinivasacharya writes, they scrutinizingly studied the Vedas. But what was their purpose? Their purpose was only to extract devotion, only to expound to the world devotion, how it is the essence of all the knowledge of the Vedas. But how did they do it? Sanatana Goswami, he was such a scholar of the Vedas. But when he approached Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he presented himself as being ignorant and fallen. And he said, people call me a pundit and I believe them. That is how shameless I am. I don't know anything. I don't really know who I am or what, why I'm suffering. Lord Chaitanya understood. He knew everything. But this is actually the way he's feeling. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami, you are fit to be my guru. That's how much you know. But still, this is the way you feel because you're a devotee. So in this spirit, the Goswamis took the Vedic literatures and they scrutinized them. But it was all in this very, very humble foundational spirit of devotion. And it was only for the purpose of serving the Lord. It wasn't for the purpose of becoming learned. It wasn't for the purpose of being famous. It was simply for the purpose of serving the Lord. And how are they serving the Lord? By giving bhakti to others. By revealing the essence. Krishna is, a devotee is saragrahi, always seeking the essence. And what is the essence? Devotional service to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada is very, very strong in this verse that bhaktya mama vijananti. Only by devotional service can the Supreme Lord be understood. What is our service attitude? This is basic. This is what attracts Krishna. We are all being infatuated by Madan. By the material energy, Maya Sukaya. Infatuated by all sorts of passionate temptations within this world for physical and subtle physical things. And it's impossible to overcome. Great power. Maya is very powerful. But Krishna's Madan Mohan. He's all attractive. Why are we not attracted to Krishna? But Srimati Radharani is Bhakti Devi. She's the possessor, the proprietor of Bhakti. She's Madan Mohan Mohini. She attracts Krishna. Love attracts Krishna. In our Gaudiya Sampradaya, if we become the servant of the servant of the servant of Srimati Radharani, the power of her favor to us, if she just blesses us and gives her reference to Krishna, then Madan Mohan, Krishna will attract us to him and him alone, because we have come in contact with the personification of bhakti. If we serve our guru, if we serve the Vaishnavas, and we please Srimati Radharani, then Krishna becomes so pleased with us for being the servant of the servant that Madan Mohan, he gives himself to us. He gives us himself. And he's all attractive. And that is param drisvani vartate. That is the higher taste. Krishna wants to give himself. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna, on so many occasions, he says to Haridas Thakur, I am a prisoner in your heart. Oh, the Lord is Swarat. He's completely independent. He can do anything, any way, at any time. How could the Lord be a prisoner? A prison means there's a higher, more powerful force than yourself that's containing you, and you can't get out. How is the Lord a prisoner? He's a prisoner of love. Because he's so attracted by that love, he can't escape. He can't go. And the gopis, even when he left them, he never really left them. In Rasa Lila, when Krishna left the gopis, did he really leave the gopis? When he physically left, they went mad, intoxicated in remembering him so deeply within their hearts. He was even more manifest in their hearts after he left. He couldn't leave the heart of the gopis, no matter what, because of their love. Even when he went to Mathura and Dwarka and stayed away for many, many long years, decades and decades and decades, they never forgot him for a moment. They conquered him. He gave himself to them. He was a prisoner in their hearts. When Srila Prabhupada was on Jaladuta, after those heart attacks and seasickness and so many things, he didn't know if he would survive. And Krishna manifested to him with all the incarnations on a boat to show that Krishna wanted to show, I will take care of this boat, Jaladuta. No matter what happened, Krishna was in his heart. Krishna had given himself to Prabhupada. Why? Because Prabhupada gave himself to Krishna. Therefore, there is no greater opulence than bhakti. This is the purpose of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. In the line of Prahlad Maharaj, to want nothing else than bhakti.
to follow the process by which we can access that bhakti. And to be willing to make great sacrifices to give that bhakti to others. Not to be diverted, not to be attracted to anything else. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. He was so austere and such an advanced devotee. People were going to him for blessings. Now, for most people, when rich people and kings were coming, even big, powerful kings were coming for blessings. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji said, "You want my blessing? Stay here with me." Now, where was he? He was just wearing a loincloth, sitting on the bank of the Ganges in a turned-over boat, wooden fisher boat, in the area where everyone used to come to respond to nature's calls. He said, "My blessing, you stay here with me." Nobody stayed. Nobody stayed. Because they didn't want bhakti. They wanted something else. He only wanted to give bhakti. Because that's opulence. That's real. That's beyond time. Because bhakti attracts Krishna. And Krishna is all attractive. When we say with an honest and earnest heart, "Krishna, I'm yours," then Krishna becomes ours. That is Krishna. When Vibhishan came to surrender to Ram, Sugriva was very much worried. How can we trust him? He's the brother of Ravana, and bloodline goes very deep. He may be having some family dispute with Ravana now, but at a certain point, when we're really on the brink of killing Ravana, he's going to turn to Ravana. How can we trust him? He's born and raised in a Rakshasa dynasty. How can we trust this man? We should kill him, reject him. Hanuman said, "I think he's serious." And Ram said, "If someone even one time says, 'My Lord, I'm yours,' with a sincere and honest heart, I accept him. And I am his. Even if Ravana himself, despite all of his offenses, all of his sins, all of his crimes, all his offenses to me and Sita, even if he comes to me and says with an honest heart, 'I am yours,' I will accept him." That is bhakti. "My Lord, I am yours. I want this more than anything else in the world. It's the only real wealth I'm striving and praying for. Devotion to you, the servant of the servant of your servants." And whether we're powerful and wealthy or great scholars or very simple people, use it for Krishna. That's all. That simple fruit vendor, she was a Pulinda, yes? She was not. She was a tribal jungle lady. She had no education whatsoever. She had what little wealth, whatever little fruits she would pick in the forest, she would try to sell them and get some grains in return. She was totally unknown, uneducated, from a jungle tribe, just trying to sell some fruit. And when Krishna came before her with a few little grains and smiled, she just wanted to please that little boy. And she gave him as many fruits as he wanted. And what was the result? Krishna gave her not only
emeralds and rubies and diamonds in her basket, but he gave her the fruit of love of God. Who is she? He also gave the fruit of love of God to Yudhisthira Maharaj, who was the king of the entire planet. He gave the same thing to the tribal lady from the jungle selling little fruit and to Yudhisthira Maharaj. Because they wanted bhakti. They wanted to please him. So this is Prahlad's message. This is what we're impressed with. This is what we want. This is what we honor and revere. Devotion. Because we want Krishna, and there's no other way. And Krishna is so merciful. He has descended within his name. If we simply develop the proper service attitude and make this our focused goal, if we study the Vedas and become scholars, we're not proud. We're just doing it to get bhakti and give bhakti. If you're a scholar, it's your service attitude, not your scholarship, that pleases Krishna. If you're giving donations and you're a wealthy man or woman, it's not what you give, it's your service attitude that pleases Krishna. If you're a good singer or a good dancer or a good manager, it's not what you do, it's your service attitude that pleases Krishna. And when we have a proper service attitude, devotion, simple devotion, then Krishna manifests within our hearts as we chant his holy name. Questions? Yes. How many people attended Rath Yatra yesterday? It was wonderful, Rath Yatra. Compared to the crowd of Rath Yatra yesterday, you look like a little puddle of a hoof print of a calf. It was an ocean of people there. It was amazing. How grateful we are to the devotees who made that possible. Yes, Prabhu.
After years and years of devotional life, we come to finally one conclusion that advancement in devotional service is only by the mercy of the Lord. By our own austerity or penances, it's not going to work out. It's only when Krishna is pleased with us, we will be able to advance in Krishna consciousness. Now, Maharaj, you always have a fear in our life that in this particular year, in lifetime, at the same time in other lifetimes also, we have done all nonsense. And we have got devotional life in this years, in this material, in this human life. Always that fear is there, that although we are doing everything to please Krishna, and finally it is Krishna who is going to give us that pure devotion nectar, and we don't know whether Krishna will give it or not give it, that pure love of God. So, and we don't want to come back also in this material world. It's such a crazy place. And at the same time, we don't have that patience like Mukunda of 10 million births to stay over here. So we are in a crux situation. We don't want to come. At the same time, we don't have patience. And we know everything depends on Krishna. So in the backside of our mind, we have one serious endeavor that we wanted to know whether Krishna will consider or is considering our proposal, or somehow or other, Krishna will really considering us, or he still wants to us to rot in this material world by seeing our past life. So how to check ourselves that Krishna is really considering us, and he is not going to take us, he'll take us back to Godhead and not make us rotten in this material world for a long period of time.
A devotee does not rot in the material world. A devotee grows in the material world. A fruit can be blossoming and growing and becoming more and more ripe, or another fruit can be rotting. Yes? For those who do not sincerely follow the path of bhakti, they are rotting in the material world. But for a devotee, even with all the trials and tribulations, if we're just sincerely endeavoring for devotional service, trying to follow the order of Guru and Krishna, trying to take the name of the Lord sincerely, trying to serve, such a devotee is, it may be quick or it may be very gradual, is blossoming and ripening. Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses example of mango. A neophyte devotee is like a hard, unripe mango. Yes? It has to stay on the tree. What if we just... if it keeps getting the water and the sunshine, then gradually it's become more and more and more ripened. So our hearts, our devotion, it may not be pure at this time, it may not be ripe, but if we keep watering it with hearing and chanting and proper service attitude, and we keep it in the sunshine of the light of the Vaishnavas association, gradually it becomes ripe. So you are not rotting. You are ripening in this material world. But sometimes the association of devotees, sometimes the sun, it's quite hot. So we have to be tolerant and just keep receiving the benefits. Very important. But when we begin to indulge in sense gratification, or if we give up the path of bhakti, then we should understand we'll be rotting. Punar punas charavata charavanana. So in your case, whether you are ripening for 10 million births, or whether by Prabhupada's mercy you go back to Godhead in this very life, either one is auspicious if we are sincere. But we should never give up. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Maharaj, you said just now that for bhakti we require intense desire to be successful in bhakti. In material world, we have intense desire for everything else. Whether people work in the office or when they take care of their family, real intense desire they have to get success there. But actually, for bhakti, we haven't got that intense desire. How to get that intense desire?
By associating with people who have intense desire. That's the beginning. By associating with Prahlad Maharaj, by hearing his words. By associating with devotees who are really striving. A moment's association of a devotee who has that intense desire is more valuable than all the wealth in the entire creation. It's more valuable than all the mystic powers and even liberation. It's one moment's association of a person who has those desires. But what it means to associate is that we're listening, we're hearing from those persons, and we're eager to serve what they speak and to please them. To have that association is what attracts Krishna to awaken that intense desire within our heart. If you're uneducated and you want an education, what do? You go to school. Yes? You go to school because you're associating with people and doing the things by which you get education. If you want to be a strong athlete, what do? You associate with people who can teach you how to do it, and you do the things that make you strong. If you want money, if you want to be rich, what do? You don't just sit home and say, I want to be rich. You associate with people who know how to be rich, and then you go out and do it. Yes? So we want pure devotional service. It begins with our desire. And when we start, we desire the desire. We don't have the desire. We don't have the desire, but we want the desire. The desire itself is our goal. Just to have that desire attracts Krishna. So we don't have the desire, but we want the desire. So we associate with those people who have the desire. And we do the things that will awaken that desire. With the desire, for the desire. And if Krishna sees that it's really what we want, he will give us that desire. When Prabhupada came to the West, not everyone had the desire, but just by associating with him, they had the desire for the desire, just by his association. And then by following him, they gain the desire. Begins with hearing in the association of devotees. Our mindset changes. The things that we consider so important become just things we have to do. But what's really important is the need of the soul to love God. Yes, Sridhama Saka Prabhu. All of the historic question askers are assembled.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Maharaj, you mentioned in the lecture about that fruit seller, for example, So, you know, the Bhagavatam and scriptures are full of so many examples of such devotees who very innocently came across the Lord and being very much attracted to the Lord, immediately, spontaneously, they offered some service to the Lord. And in reciprocation, immediately Krishna gave them bhakti. So how do we understand this as sadhakas? Because we, though we are seeing the Lord every day, we are not, you know, spontaneously attracted, maybe because we don't have that faith still. You know, we're not seeing the Lord before us. So we don't have that faith still to appreciate this is the Lord. So we don't have that spontaneous attraction and we don't offer that spontaneous service. So how do we understand this, that these people, they had some special qualifications, so they just got the causeless mercy of the Lord and they got bhakti, whereas we are, you know, despite seeing the Lord, we don't have that feeling in our heart. So how do we develop that? That how do we get that causeless mercy?
When the Lord is personally, physically present, He extends inconceivable mercy that is extraordinary. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Ratha Yatra, anyone who saw him, the pilgrims, the pandas, the curious onlookers, everyone attained prema bhakti just by seeing him. Hare Krishna. And when he was traveling through South India, just anybody who took the name of Krishna, he gave prema bhakti. And anyone who saw those people who he gave it to attained prema bhakti. So when the Lord comes himself for a short time, he gives very, very benevolently. But in doing so, he shows the substance of his mercy, the power of his mercy. But then after he leaves with us the process of achieving that mercy. Process of sadhana. And that the same exact mercy is there. But we have to pray for it. We have to work for it. We have to really, really express to Krishna our seriousness before he gives it to us. Lord Chaitanya and Krishna are just as much in their holy names now as they were when they were physically manifested. But they reveal themselves very much in proportion to our desire and our will and how we develop our bhakti. But when they are personally in their avatars and it's written about in the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, then they extend their mercy in the most causeless, inconceivable ways. Just to show us, this is the power of what he can do. And that gives us faith. If Krishna can just give that fruit vendor ecstatic love in a moment, for just having a little attraction to him. Well, she actually was very attracted to him. I'm seeing the deity every day. I'm chanting the holy names every day. Certainly, I will also attain the same goal. The same mercy will come upon me. But I have to qualify myself. Hmm?
And in certain ways, you're more fortunate. Yes? To show your desire, you can go through all the tribulations and the hardships and the difficulties to show your sincerity to Krishna. And you have a chance to please him so much. So much more than if he just gives it instantly. Yes? When you go back to Godhead, Krishna embraces you. All that you have undergone for me, all the insults, all the pains, all you had to give up, everything for me you did. Krishna cries and embraces such a devotee. So in a certain way, our situation is a very, very great blessing, where if Krishna just gives it in an instant, because once he gives it, then the austerity is not so much. Yes? But to try to get it, you really have to show your will. When you have it, there's not many temptations. But Krishna's very pleased when we tolerate the temptations for the higher purpose of pleasing him. So it's a different kind of mercy. The mercy he shows to those people where he gives instant prema is to show us his power of giving prema and to assure us with faith that we'll get it too. But he wants something of us. He wants to enjoy seeing our will for it. And this is how we can serve him and please him. And it's beautiful. So fortunate. We've been given the process of sadhana. We've been given the path of bhakti. And we're given all the temptations and sufferings and joys and frustrations and everything else that help us to become dear to the Lord if we just make the right choice. So do not feel left out. Feel fortunate. He did those things for those people just to help you today to become perfect. Does that answer your question? Yes, Gaur Hari Prabhu. Another historical question asked.
Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the wonderful class. Sometimes there's a dilemma, Maharaj. There are devotees who really attract you because of their intense desire to just practice Krishna consciousness. It's like Anand Vrindavan Prabhu or Krishnanand Prabhu, just attract your heart like anything. Because they are so serious about Krishna consciousness, about chanting the holy names, and you want to associate with them more and more. On the other hand, there are other services, solving devotees' problems, solving crisis management, and indirect ways of preaching. So sometimes find it very difficult to strike the right balance. You feel more and more attracted to spend time with such serious devotees. But then how do you strike the right balance so that we get nourished at the same time we don't do injustice to our service?
In giving, we receive. Srila Prabhupada didn't want devotees just sitting around him all day. When he was there, he wanted us to hear. But then he would send us out to serve. Who was just telling the story? I'm sorry, I don't remember the name, but one devotee was telling the story of how he was so eager to go and see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada looked at him like, what are you doing here? You know what I want you to do. your service. One time, I think it was in Mayapur, devotees were asking about, you know, how we really want to be with you all the time and close to you. And Prabhupada said, in this room, who's the closest to me? And devotees, you know, Prabhupada said, the closest person to me in this room is this fly on my face. He said, Bhuta, he's simply causing me disturbance. So it's not about physical closeness. It's about our service attitude. If we're serving the will of Guru, we're close to the Guru's heart. If we're serving the will of Guru, the Guru is close to our heart. And the Vaishnavas. So yes, we want to be in the association of serious devotees who are seeking the essence of bhakti as much as possible. But we also have to understand we have our service. We have our service to other Vaishnavas who are having difficulties, where we have to help them. We have our prescribed duties. The Kurma Brahman, he was with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How would you like his association? Gaur Hari Prabhu. How would you like the association of the original Gaur Hari Prabhu? Here is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the house of Kurma Brahman, speaking Krishna Katha, doing Namaskya Sankirtan. Kurma Brahman went to the Kurma temple and saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing and performing kirtan and attracting so many thousands and thousands of people's hearts. He was in ecstasy watching Lord Chaitanya. Ecstasy, just watching him and singing with him. And then he invited him to his house, and Lord Chaitanya spent the night at his house. And Kurma Brahman said, I don't want to be with my family anymore. It's all miserable. It's all so dry and monotonous stuff, you know, family life and occupation. I don't want it anymore. I'm just suffering due to the waves of the miseries of this ocean of material existence. I want to go with you and stay with you. Yes? And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised him, don't ever talk like that. Stay, do your duty, and chant Hare Krishna, and hear about Krishna, and speak to others about Krishna. And if you do this, I'll always be with you, and you'll always be with me. You will see me always if you perform this. Yare de katare kaha Krishna upadesha maragoi guru hai tare desh. Take Krishna by chanting his holy names, and speak this teaching of Gita to others. Become guru by sharing Krishna with others. That's not easy. That means you have to deal with people's problems. That means you'd have to deal with people's doubts. Now, what would you rather do? Deal with people's problems and deal with people's doubts, or go with Lord Chaitanya and be with him? Lord Chaitanya was... Kurma Brahman saw him for a few hours at the temple, and he spent one night with him. Can you imagine the taste of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personal association for one night, and then he was going to leave? And he wanted to leave everything and go with him. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no. You have your family, you have your duties, you perform your duties. And by doing according to my will, we will always be together. It's by serving the Lord and pleasing the Lord that we actually realize the Lord. It's not just physical proximity. So when you're with Krishnananda Prabhu, or who else did you say? Ananda Vrindavan Prabhu.
We hear them, we see them, we serve them, we assimilate who they are, what they are, their taste for Krishna, their enthusiasm for service. Apply it to your life, and in that way you're always in their association. Does that answer your question?
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Radhe Shyam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for highlighting the quintessence of the scriptures, the service attitude, with so many wonderful examples. I had a question when you said about the gopis' natural devotion to Krishna. It seems to me that those who do not have such a natural devotion may have to compensate for their lack of devotion by performance of some austerities. Like, this question came to my mind. Mahaprabhur Bhaktagan Vairagya Pradhan Ihadeki Pritahana Gaurav Bhagavan. Why this austerity is called as the basis of a Vaishnava's life by Mahaprabhu? Like, we see the austerities of Raghunath Das Goswami, or Mahaprabhu telling Sanatana Goswami that, very nice, you have given up your blanket and all that. Why? And also, when Vaishnavas returned to Bengal, they were asked how Rupa and Sanatana are living in Vrindavan, and their austerities are highlighted. Do austerities have any role to enhance our devotion, or why this particular verse that came to my mind, Maharaj, please, if you can clarify it.
Only Radhe Shyam could ask that question with such enthusiasm. And nobody understands the context of what I just said except the brahmacharis in Pune. Human life is meant for austerity. But real austerity is to accept what is favorable for devotional service and reject what is unfavorable for devotional service. When austerity is performed with that intense desire for bhakti, it softens our heart. But when austerity is performed without that, it could harden our heart. So the essence of austerity is to not engage in activities or words that please us, but to engage in activities and words that please Krishna. That's the basis of austerity. And people like Raghunath Das Goswami, they were so intense on serving Krishna that Raghunath Das Goswami, it wasn't that he would only take a little buttermilk every day thinking that nobody else could do this except me, which was true. Nobody else could do it except him. They weren't just living under trees every night and doing some madhukari because they wanted the fame of being austere, or they wanted some material benefit for that purpose. Raghunath Das Goswami was thinking that so intensely that my time is for Krishna. And when he would just take that one sip of buttermilk, he would think, just see how fallen I am. I've wasted this time of a sip for my sense gratification. So he wasn't proud of his austerity. He was ashamed for that sip of buttermilk that he was taking so much time away from his devotional service. That's how intensely he wanted to serve. So the six Goswamis, they minimized their bodily needs, their sleeping, their eating, their everything, simply so that they could totally maximize the time and the absorption in their humble service to the Lord. It wasn't for the sake of austerity itself. It was for the sake of their service. And King Priyavrata, he was living something like that too, and then he was asked to become a king and get married and have children. And you know what you have to do to have children? And live in a palace. Narada Muni was teaching him about to live like a Goswami. And then Swayambhuva Manu said, no, we need a king. And then Brahma came down and sided with Swayambhuva Manu. And Narada Muni gave full blessings. So Priyavrat gave up his kalpan and put on the robes of a king. Gave up his eating fruit and roots to eat what kings eat. But he didn't do it for himself. He did it for Krishna. That was austerity for him. It was more austere for Priyavrata to be a king than it was being a Goswami. And even in that association, he got a little caught up. But because he was doing it for Krishna, Krishna ultimately protected him. So really, what is austerity? Austerity really means no sense gratification for me, but utilizing all my time and all my energy to please Krishna through devotional service. And brahmacharis have their austerity, and grihasthas have their austerity. But what Krishna sees is the sincerity of our purpose. Who was that? Rupa Kaviraj. He was really austere. But he insulted a lady devotee. Was it Krishna Priya? He insulted her. Krishna was not concerned that he was chanting the holy names and he was performing all tapasya at Radha Kund. He made him a ghost for offending a Vaishnava. That means there was some pride in his heart of his great learning and his great austerities. So what we learn from these Goswamis is they were never proud of their austerities. They were never thinking themselves better because of their austerities. They were always very, very humble. They never thought, I am austere. They always thought they were fallen. And whatever they did was only to increase the intensity of their devotion for no other reason. That type of austerity is necessary. We want to simplify our lives. Sense gratification and bhakti go ill together. So to minimize our sense gratification as far as possible so that we could use all of our energy for the as the servant of Krishna, that is real austerity. And they're giving a standard that puts us all to shame. Raghunath Das Goswami was empowered to make us all humble. Whether we're brahmacharis, grihasthas, whatever, when we look at Raghunath Das Goswami, all we could think is, I'm a fallen soul. If ever you get proud about anything, just think about Raghunath Das Goswami. And like, what am I? I'm attached to Sambar and nice rice and sabji. What a standard. Does that answer your question? We should end now.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.